Good leaders make people believe in them. Great leaders make people believe in themselves. And that's what small organizations that are doing this are doing it right. They're learning what the dream, the vision is of the individual. They're learning what the potential talents are and allowing them to grow into that and express it through their organization. Amazing people will stay because they can express themselves, because they can be the most of themselves. That's the key.
Hey, law firm owners, welcome to the Your Practice Mastered podcast. We're your hosts. I'm MPS.
And I'm Richard James. And MPS, I know that you've just gotten to meet Michael in person, or Mike in person today for the first time. In person, virtually, that was a little weird. But anyway, Mike and I have been friends for a number of years here, been in the same mastermind group, watched him grow his business from when he maybe had two or three or maybe four books to now he's got nine books. We're with the famous, infamous Mike Michalowicz. And Mike has helped, as you know, Michael, Mike has helped many of our members through the years with his teachings through all of his books, probably the most famous, Profit First, but certainly The Pumpkin Plan and Clockwork. And we've had our clients come back and talk about your lessons, Mike, throughout all of the years you've been with us. And so thank you for sharing your time today. Thank you for being with us. This is going to be a wonderful conversation. Can't wait for our world to learn more about you.
I can't wait for this conversation. And Richard and MPS, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure. And to the law firm owners listening, look, we do the gentleman's agreement around here, right? So if this isn't your first time listening or watching, you're about to get a ton of value today and hear some great stories. Make sure to click that follow or subscribe button, depending on where you're listening or watching. And Mike, we like to loosen up the audience a little bit around here. So what's maybe something that not everyone knows about?
I love sauna time. So we have a little sauna at our house. And I'm probably there three or four times a week, pumping it up to 175, 180 degrees. It's an old traditional format where you pour water over the rocks. I found that to be perhaps the best meditative and thinking time because it's so hot. Your mind can't scramble around anymore. You got to stay on one thing just to stay focused. And I just find it relaxing and cathartic and a learning experience, or at least ideation experience.
And it gets you out of the winters of Jersey.
Oh, right. Because that's the cool down process. You run outside and the sleet's coming down and there's ice everywhere and you freeze to death and you run back to the sauna.
Have you done the opposite? Have you done like this ice bath challenge thing that people doing?
A version of it, which is cold showers. So it only drops down to like 47, maybe 50 degrees. That alone is brutally hard. You know, 50 degrees, it sounds like nothing. When it's cold water, oh my gosh. But I have not done the ice bath, no.
I've seen these guys jump in the ice and then they're chewing on ice and they're putting sauce on ice and they're tasting the ice of the week. And I'm like, I just can't.
Yeah.
I just can't. No, I moved to Phoenix and now to Charlotte for a reason. I like it warmer than I like it.
Yeah, I hear you.
Michael, we're here today to really dive into, you know, we could talk about any one of the books, but really this concept of all in, I think, is where we want to turn today, Michael. So where do you want to go? I'll let you be the driver.
Yeah. I mean, so Mike, why don't you share the process? What led to the creation of All In?
Oh yeah, great. That's a great starting point. I'll give you the aha. And it started a journey about 6 years ago, really to investigate it. So the aha was this: 20 years ago, I used to be in computer forensics, computer crime investigation, worked with a lot of defense attorneys. And one day I ran the numbers. I spent a full day in my office saying, if we simply do X, Y, and Z, not only can we take down our biggest competitor, we can achieve $10 million in revenue, which up to that point, I've never had that kind of experience. So I was like, this is amazing. I had a crystal clear vision for the company. So as the grand gesture goes, I decide I got to reveal it to the company and I'm going to do it in our huddle room, which I had 30 employees at the time. It was a brick and mortar. I called everyone in. But right prior, the big whiteboard on there, I wrote $10 million in bubble letters, and put one of those like mega sticky notes over it so you couldn't see it, you know, for the reveal. And I did the most important thing, which was I queued up the pump up music of the 80s, which was Eye of the Tiger by Survivor. Yeah. So you hear dun, 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 in the background. And I call on the team, and with great flair, I'm like, this is the year that we achieve the dream of every small business to take down a company, blah, blah, blah. And we're going to do, and with, you know, this huge flair, I rip off the sign, $10 million in revenue. And there's silence. And there was one or two giggles. So I appreciate you participating. And I'm like, what? Like, this is our vision. people, $10 million in revenue and more silence. And some people just kind of said, okay, and shuffled away. My assistant at the time, her name was Patty Zanelli, and she came up to me. She said, listen, Mike, if we achieve $10 million in revenue, you get the bigger house. You get the new car. But why? What about our visions for ourselves? And that was the epiphany. I was like, oh my God, the corporate vision is not the corporation's vision. The corporate vision is the dream that the leader or the owner has for themselves. That satisfied my fat ego. That meant something to me. I made up for childhood trauma. But my team, I found out one person was fighting a terminal disease. Another person wanted to buy their first house. Someone just wanted to spend more time at home. Someone wanted to learn to speak another language. Once I understood the individual visions of my colleagues, I realized the goal of a great leader is to care for our team members' visions equally to our own personal vision, the corporate vision. And when we do, when we care and we block and tackle for our team members so they can achieve the outcomes they want in life, they'll help us achieve the outcomes we want in life. That was the epiphany. But then there was one more component. I started researching this out actively 5-6 years ago. What I found was this went on steroids when COVID happened. There was an interesting shift in our environment. What was prior desire, I want to work from home one day. I need a more flexible work schedule if I can get it. Now it became an expectation and COVID switched it. I don't want to work from home. I demand to work from home or I demand a flexible work schedule. So when COVID happened, I said, my gosh, there's a new work environment and there's a new approach. I got to codify this. And I created the book. We've deployed in our own companies. Admittedly, I am not a great leader. I think I am a better leader than I've ever been. And I aspire to be a great leader. But I think the tools are all in this book to help anyone that has that aspiration achieve it.
So a couple of points. So this book, did you use the same formula to write this book as you kind of did framework for you writing that same kind of methodology to go through it? Because it feels like, I think it was five-ish years ago, it was Clockwork, somewhere in that range, right? And it felt like this was the evolution of where Clockwork was going. I don't know if that's a fair assessment, but this felt like this is the next step of what you've got to do in order to be able to achieve Clockwork. Is that accurate?
That's right. So I'm privileged to have many people reach out to me after reading one of my books and share their stories. And I watch what are the needs now. So that's part of it. They're like, there's a whole new workforce, new expectations. And the belief was, I wish my employees would act differently, or I need to put different expectations on them. And that's not the truth. We as leaders are the ones who need to adjust. The other thing I do is I use, and this is only recently I realized this, I use the same model for every book I write, anything I'm investigating. And it's the same model as DMO, desire, method, outcome. Well, I ask in any scenario, what is someone's desire? So when I wrote Profit First, I said, what's your desire as a business owner? And financial freedom was the desire, at least one component of their business. I said, okay, there's a desire. Then I say, what's the outcome you're experiencing? Not financial freedom. I'm working my ass off and I have no money. When there's a misconnect or disconnect between desire and outcome, when they're not equal, it's the method in the middle that's the problem. DMO. Right. So if desire does not equal outcome, we have to investigate the method. What I found is when it comes to teams recruiting, you know, I want the best employees. I want rock stars or A players, whatever the term du jour is. Well, what's the outcome?
Right.
Very few people hire high performers. In most businesses, there's a lot of turnover.
Unless you own Netflix.
Unless you own Netflix. That's right. So the desire and the outcome is a mismatch. That means there's a problem with the method. I investigated four main categories where I saw desire and outcome mismatched. And I'm a contrarian person. I believe I found and tested and proven, at least for my own businesses and many businesses I've worked with, that if we change the method, desire will match outcome.
So the desire for Clockwork was for Profit First was to get financial freedom. For Clockwork was
personal
to get
financial
freedom, but also be able to take a week off. Because I remember Don Golden, I think he messaged you. He was a guest on the show. He's been a client of ours for a long time. And I think he messaged you, I scheduled my week off on, you know, June, whatever. And he took four weeks off. Right. He took his 4 weeks off and he messaged you and he goes, Mike replied to me. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. Like he should. Right. And yeah, of course, Mike replied to you. So what our clients or members took out of that was really, okay, time freedom. But then how to get there was really, like you said, this idea that we're going to magically just hire A players.
Yeah.
And I love to read, and I love the book that Netflix co-founder wrote. I'm dropping the name, but the point of the book was that he hires high A-level players and makes sure they're paid at the highest possible level, yeah, and inspires them to go find out what salaries for them would be like somewhere else and bring it back to make sure they're getting paid at the highest, yeah, level from Netflix. Yeah. And then when small business reads that, they think, oh, maybe that's what I should do. And it's the farthest thing from what they should do. Is that part of the inspiration for you, that you saw some of the other junk that was out there and you decided to, you had to correct that for small business owners? I don't mean to call out the authors. That's not fair. I mean, it's right for somebody. It's just not right.
It's not practical. The founder of Netflix, by the way, is Joey Netflix. His last name is Netflix. Big business often has big budget. And it's funny, I was sharing off air with you, an interesting phenomenon is happening. Yeah. Ever since writing this book, and the book only came out a month ago, I'm getting calls, our team is getting calls from large organizations. Actually, a Fortune 500 just called us and said, hey, we want to talk to you. And I'm like, why? And he said, we don't have big budgets anymore. Things are changing. You know, the interest rates have went up a lot. We realize that small business has a disproportionate quantity of rock star employees, but can't afford them accordingly. How is small business doing this? Small business has a secret, and it's not the foosball table or, you know, we do your laundry for you. It's allowing people to lean into their own personal vision. There's a saying, and I don't know who to attribute it to, but it ain't my saying, but I love it. It says, good leaders make people believe in them. Great leaders make people believe in themselves. And that's what small organizations that are doing this are doing it right. They're learning what the dream, the vision is of the individual. They're learning what the potential talents are and allowing them to grow into that and express it through the organization. Amazing people will stay because they can express themselves, because they can be the most of themselves. That's the key to rockstar talent.
Alonzo, you just got your clip, by the way, if you're listening in the background. The producer just got his opening clip for you there, Mike. That was good. That was a nice soundbite. I appreciate that. And it's true. And it's not easy to do. Sorry, Michael, I kind of hogged the...
No, this is good.
Where do you want to go from here?
No, this is good. I was going to ask just a tactical question. So, you know, a small business owner, in our case, law firm owners, reading this book, what's like a tactical thing that they can take out and implement right
away? I'll give you one that blew my mind. We've been testing it and it is a game changer. So I'll set the stage and I'll be a little bit confrontational. So interviewing is the most common approach to recruiting. And I've done the DMO analysis, desire, method, outcome. And desires, A players, the outcome is abysmal. I think it's like 5% of people recruit, stay for an extended period of time and perform well. The method is interviews. So here's the confrontational statement. Interviews are effing useless. And perhaps interviews are good for one thing. If the job for that employee is to do interviews for the rest of their life, because then you're measuring how well they'll perform. But interviews only reveal experiential ability, what I've done in the past. And now there's a next level. It's called innate ability. There's tools like Enneagram and DISC and Myers-Briggs and Predictive Index. There's countless ones, StrengthsFinder. Those tools are helpful to give the internal makeup. But what we really want to look at, the 800-pound gorilla, is potential. What could this person do in the right environment? So we want to seek people with the most potential. The question, of course, is how do you find people's potential? Well, there's a way to do it. And there's a $500 billion with a T dollar industry that only does potential analysis. The industry is sports. And if you ever are interested in playing sports, you don't go for an interview and say, hey, you bilingual, speak Spanish? You know, how are you on the field? Tell us. No, show us. Well, I have a personal experience with this, and I'm going to show you how it translates into business. I played lacrosse in high school and admittedly was a average to marginal player. Well, during my high school career, I went to Hobart Lacrosse Camp. I live in the Northeast. That at the time was one of the preeminent lacrosse schools. And there was like 300, maybe 500 students from all over the East Coast that went to this camp. And I was getting better. I was learning new skills. During that process of educating me and the other students, some of the kids got tapped on the shoulder and they said, wow, you're really good at XYZ skill. We'd like to bring you to another advanced field. What they were doing was sorting potential. That's what elite companies do. We run a camp or a workshop where people are learning, but during the process, we're also vetting, we're cherry picking people who are the best performers. Potential reveals itself always in the three same stages. First, curiosity. I'm interested in playing lacrosse. Then desire. I want to play more of it. And then thirst. I can't quit it. So what we do is put on an educational event and seek out the indicators of potential, desire, thirst. Now, this may sound kind of theoretical. Is it practical? Well, let me give you a couple things. Home Depot does this. So there's already a corporation doing this. The next time you see, hey, build a birdhouse workshop, come down to the store, they are recruiting you. Now, how do they stage it? It's an educational event. So you come down with your kid, you build a birdhouse. Yes, you get ingratiated with the store. You have a good experience. Hopefully you become a customer or a more engaged customer. And then what they do is they have one employee sitting there simply observing. And they look for the indicators. Who's curious? Who has the most desire? Who's thirsty? Who's helping other parents? Who asks the most questions? Who's the most engaged? Who stays the longest? They will tap that person on the shoulder and say, you show all the behaviors what we want in a great Home Depot employee. Have you ever considered working here? They use it as a recruiting platform. So this is how we can deploy it. Set up an educational event. You need a paralegal? Set up a course saying, become a paralegal or learn paralegal skills. Or if you need someone more advanced, give them a specific skill. Learn how to do defense litigation as a paralegal. And you have a prerequisite of requirements in case you need a more advanced person. Do not say, we're looking to recruit. Simply look to educate. The power here is you're no longer looking for people who are looking for a job, which is a minority of people. Now, anyone who's looking to improve themselves will attend. And you know the number one group looking to improve themselves? A players, rock stars. The great people want to get greater. The people with the most potential want to express it more. You can reach out to your competition. We've done that with groups already. And say, hey, send over your paralegals. We'll teach them how to perform another level. They will pay for it. It's an educational event after all. And during this process, you are elevating everyone. That lacrosse example, I did not get tapped on the shoulder at Hobart. I did play collegiate lacrosse. And I would argue part of the reason is because of what I learned at that camp. I got better. So the beautiful thing is everyone elevates, but in the process, you cherry pick the persons you want and you approach them and say, we have an opportunity for you. That's the model instead of interviews.
First, this, yeah, I mean, right, Michael, I know what you're going to say. This was like, I mean, so like get the book, okay? So that was like a precursor, okay? If that's one thing out of the book, you got to read the whole book, right? Because, oh my gosh, you just laid down the law on a whole new way to think about attracting talent, right? And I don't know how you figured it out because I've been at this a long time. And I'd never heard outside of your book and your, what you tell that I'd never heard that Home Depot story.
Yeah. It's a lot of research. You kind of have to go incognito. These companies don't want to reveal it. I had access to M&M Mars, you know, major candy manufacturer and had, there's a confidential source I cannot reveal because they shared inside strategies and stuff that company didn't want revealed. I interviewed the University of Chicago, their medical department, and they do something very similar to this that has transformed their recruiting. I spoke to the Baltimore Museum of Art and learned an extraordinary way to elevate talent. So there's the recruiting phase kind of we talked about, but there's also the retention phase and then raising the bar for the organization. So yeah, that is just a little peek into what's inside the book.
So inside baseball for us, so I'm going to tell you how I immediately saw this apply for us, okay? Because we are business owners, just like you're a business owner. I'd love to hear how you applied it in yours because I know you eat your own dog food. So for us, as you just said, that here's our traditional process for appointment setters. It's one of the legs of our business. This is not an advertisement, but we look for appointment setters for our clients and they're in Guadalajara, Mexico. We handle the advertising, the recruiting, the paperwork, everything. And we have to go through a traditional process of doing interviews and the whole nine yards. And we have to sort through a whole pile of do to get to the one, what we think is the rising star. And then what we do is we actually put the rising star through we call it a 96-hour test to make sure we identify, do they have desire? Do they have curiosity? Yeah. And do they have this, like, can't, they absolutely have to do this. This is a job they love. So they really know what the job is going to be. And we know if they're capable and willing to do it. And we end up weeding through a lot of people that don't pass a 96-hour test because we have no way of knowing these things before we got them in other than an ad in an interview. However, if we started running educational platforms down there and run an advertising for an education model of a webinar of sorts or whatever, and we start teaching the people how to be a great appointment setter and find those who ask great questions and raise up and have the right diction in their language and are coachable and all these things, we'll be able to tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, are you happy with where you are right now? Or would you like an opportunity to come work at a place like ours where you'll make more money, have better hours, the whole, and feel like you're in a professional setting because you're working for a law firm. I mean, very well, this one lesson and this one thing, Michael, tell me if I'm wrong, MPS, this is game changer.
Absolutely game changing. I was pretty blown away as I was hearing you talk about this, Mike. And one of the things that you said, and you said it quickly, but that I caught is you're totally right. The people that want to attend these types of workshops are the A players, because the A players are the people wanting to grow. And so you're literally creating an opportunity to surround yourself with a bunch of A players. And so I just thought that was brilliant.
And they're not necessarily the people seeking a job. That's the best part. At any given time during a very healthy economy, which we're in right now, 3% of the population is unemployed. Another 3 or 4% is in a churn looking for something new actively. So we're talking about 7% of the population. It's very limiting. And of that, how many of the top performers, the people with the most potential, are actively looking? It's a modicum of that. So for most companies, it's a lot of churn through this interview process, testing, skills assessments, and then we find the one. This actually broadens the scope because we're looking for people who are simply looking to improve on themselves. The other thing too is it's interesting. Sometimes the best potential employee is not someone with experience. It's the fact that they don't have experience but desire that's better, because someone with experience sometimes have to unlearn the old way of doing things, which is very hard, to be relearning the right way or your way of doing things. So sometimes you can use this to find people with potential. Now, I have used it in my own organization, and I'll give you another shortcut. So here's another little hack. Putting on a workshop or teaching something can be a little overwhelming. It sounds like, oh, I need a paralegal. I got to put together this shop. Here's another thing. Go as a student yourself to another workshop, an educational event. Maybe there's an adult education class around become a paralegal, or maybe there's a local college. Go as a student, not necessarily to learn, but you may learn something, but really to observe the other students. The structure's already in place. See which student has the most curiosity and desire and thirst. Tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, I'm here in part to find people who really want to do this. We got a job opportunity. And you'll attract people that way with no effort.
Well, yeah, and you're automatically accepted because you're in the same room that they're in, so you've got instant credibility. Exactly. So I'm not going to call you calculating in an evil way, but I need to like point something out here. So your book, Get Different, right, is all about how to differentiate yourself in marketing. Yeah. And what you just pointed out was how to get different in the marketing space of how to attract talent. Is that a fair statement? And did you consciously see that as you were building these books out?
Yeah, well, I use that DMO model, and I saw desires is not resulting in the outcome. We got to change the method. So I knew it had to be something different. So I was conscious of that. I'll tell you, even in the advertorial level, you can be different. So what we do is look at all your competition and see how they're running ads. So let's just hang on the paralegals right now. You'll typically say, seeking paralegal or some equivalent with the title there. That is the worst thing to do, because now there's a very small group that predefined themselves as a paralegal. Not that I could be one day. I already am one. This is who I am. So the identity has to be there, which actually potential rarely has the identity been formed. So you're excluding tons of people. Plus it's replicated over and over. So it becomes what's called habituated. Very hard to see your ad. It's hidden there. So our ad would say something like, just graduated college, love crunching away at the keyboard and serving the law. We should talk. That ad is like, oh, what? It's so different.
It's a whole different book.
That people go in there, and then you can start explaining, here's an opportunity to grow into something. So if you're looking for ads in the traditional sense, meaning interviews and so forth, run an ad that is radically different than the competition.
Now, are you leveraging social and paid and all the, are you doing this through traditional Indeed, Monster, ZipRecruiter, or are you finding your new team members as your team continues to grow through more of this social advertising and workshops? And is that?
Yeah. More of the social, we do the Indeed ads, but the primary source is our competition, which sounds crazy. We'll reach out to our competition and say, hey, we're running an organization. We're running a educational event. We may not identify who we are. We'll just say there's an educational event and say, send your best people here to learn a advanced skill. So my competition sends their people and pays for it to educate them on something. And then what I'll do, because I want to be ethical here, I want to educate them and serve them. I want them to return to their opportunities with advanced education. But I will say, hey guys, everyone here is coming from organizations we also represent as an organization that competes with the organizations you work with. You here show the potential to be at this elevated level. If you're seeking that opportunity, we have some slots. Please speak with your current employer. Please elevate yourself there. But if the opportunity is not there, we want you to know we're raising our hand. And that way we fill the room with usually A players, people who want to learn, gainfully employed, typically an A player, top performer, but they're coming into my room.
So how many employees do you have?
Only 20.
Only 20. Okay. Still, there's that person that's listening that has them and a secretary and just choked because they thought about the idea of having 20, well, right?
That's a great point. Well, let me qualify that. So only 20. I should have said that more of a proud thing. I'm proud to have an organization of that size. Most of my people are part-time employees. So, and I talk about this. There was a study that came out of England. The average knowledge worker is productive 3.3 hours per day, regardless of the hours worked. This blew my mind. That means if someone works for you for 8 hours or five or four, they're producing on average 3.3. Our battery drains and it needs to restore. There's a great book out there called The 3.3 Rule, and it talks about employee productivity. Explore this book. And the realization was, if I got my employees, I would say 16 of them are part-time, they will still give the same degree of output. So I just wanted to qualify that. I wish I could have an organization of six people or two or five and produce the output where we have. So I wish to be only two or three. That's the ultimate dream. I just don't know how to get there yet.
Yeah, we don't either. I think we're at 16-ish, Michael, something like that. And yeah, it's not easy.
I never want a single one of my colleagues to go. I'm blessed to be surrounded by the people I am, just like you are. But for efficiency's sake, gosh, how can we do so much more with so much less in resources?
Yeah, it's an interesting balance. We need to be able to bring on talent to be able to grow, especially in law, because it's hours for dollars kind of a thing in some respect. And so you have to build capacity. And at the same time, you need to overcome the fear of not bringing them on, because if you don't, you'll never grow. At the same time, you need to like embrace the fact that, well, there's going to be a bunch of suck that goes along with that. And you're going to have to jump into that pool. But your book is helping it suck a lot less. And so that's great. Michael, MPS, where do you want to go from here?
I'm always curious to learn just some of your success habits. What do you do on a daily basis that leads to your continued success?
I read and abide by The Miracle Morning, Hal Elrod's book, and have made my own version of it. But I do daily prayer and meditation. I do daily exercise. I do a lot of time reading. Started reading a lot about history. Just finished a biography on George Washington. That must have been a million pages, but it was probably 800. And what I realized is, my gosh, humanity, our species, our behavior of 300 years ago is the same behavior today. And it was likely the same 3,000 years ago. So there's a predictability to our patterns, and there is opportunity. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's interesting is being much more protective of time. I used to think that I was the free resource of the business. I can work, I should work as hard as long as possible. And now I realize that's a detriment to the company. I question if my productivity was any better. I don't think it was, understanding the 3-3 rule. But also, I became a crutch. I remember in my house, I installed like a hammock into a tree with a bolt. Well, over the years, the tree is kind of built around this bolt. It is unremovable or ill-removable, whatever it is. I can't get it out. And that's what was happening with my business. By always being bolted into the business, my business started morphing around me, and it had this artificial dependency on me. And that was hurting the business. The best thing I can do is remove myself from the business. And if I'm fully extracted, the business must stand on its own. So that's been a big success factor, is being less available for the business actually makes a healthier business.
Easy to say, so hard to do. So very hard to do. Yeah, our clients struggle with it. We have many who have accomplished it. I did, as I often say, before Michael came along, I played more golf than I did work in the business at one point. And then Michael came in and we were on a growth path, and I've reinserted myself back at a major level. And I will be honest, I can start to feel me being the limiting
factor. Yeah.
I can see it happening again. And Michael and I just had the conversation yesterday. We've joined a new coaching program for us so we can eat our own dog food and get coaching about what we should do and have somebody look at our business from a different view. And we were just talking about how okay, we need a very strategic plan to replace ourselves in the roles that we're in, because this business will stagnate if we're not careful. And to your point, it'll grow around us and we'll be the limiting
factor. Correct. And I'm experiencing the same thing. You know, I've extracted myself and chosen to reinsert myself as the spokesperson. What we're doing right now, I love talking about our stuff, but that becomes a limiting factor, because when the spokesperson's maxed his speaking, we're capped again. So yeah, this is a cognitive choice. Do I get enough joy that I want to sustain this? And is it worth the compromise to the business? Because I am restricting the business growth. And that's something that I consider regularly. And for now, I'll be the spokesperson.
Some days, yes. Some days,
right. And when more days are some days, no, like I get out of here, then I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on your daughter coming in the business as well. I know you shared that off camera, but you know, that's watching that happen in my world right now. It's an awful lot of fun. It's invigorating. And if you do it the way I know you're going to do it, she can also step in and figure out what roles she's going to develop in the company. And then she can become the limiting factor.
Right, right. Maybe.
Michael, where do you want to go from here?
I mean, look, obviously people probably saw your name on this podcast and they were ready to go get a copy of the book. But through just you being on here and sharing everything you have, they're definitely ready to go get a copy of the book. The question is, where do they go to do that?
Michael, mm-hmm. I invite everyone, if you're listening right now, to go to Amazon and get it. Now, this is a selfish ask. First, I do believe it's the best of me. I believe it's the best book I've written, and I think it'll be transformative. It's the download of 7 years of research into 220 pages of content, or you can get the audio. So that, I think, will serve you. Dollar for dollar, I don't think I can top that. But here's a selfish ask. If you're willing to get it, because I know the community you all have built, Amazon's algorithm is monitoring who buys and the avatars like you. It's all behind the scenes in their algorithm. But if you do buy the book, even if you have a copy ready, this is my boldest, most selfish ask, and gift it to one of your colleagues, your team members, another leader, a friend, the algorithm says, oh, you bought it. Therefore, these 100 other people like you should be marketed to. So I am selfishly asking you to get a copy of the book, because selfishly, it serves me in marketing.
Yeah. Well, and as it should, you've put the sweat in, not just in this book, but in the building from all of your other books to this book, Mike. I've got a question for you. What are you, I'm stealing Michael's question, but I'm going to do it because
it's on the script.
What are you most excited about? What's got you totally pumped and ready to go?
Yeah. Next? Well, in regards to the business economy, it's AI, and it's because it is the great equalizer. The big companies can't hide behind their size or leverage that anymore. The smallest of small businesses has the ultimate tool now. Size doesn't matter at all anymore. So AI has me excited. For me personally, I'm investigating multiple things, and I'm in this pause before I write my next book. There's three or four things I'm majorly interested in, but I believe it's in human connection and human communication in the business arena. There's a new form of communication that's coming about, because we're losing the tactile experience right now. You know, we see each other, but we're not with each other. And that is a challenge. And it's also an opportunity. I think that might be the next book I write.
Yeah, well, great leaders make people feel great about themselves, right? And my friend, I have watched you through the years morph and change, and you have become more in touch with the humanity of your team and the teams of others than many that I've seen. And I think that has served you and your company very well. But because of your willingness to put your thoughts in words and create your framework and put it in books and do the hard work to promote them, we now get the benefit of that. And I think this world is going to be a better place because of the realization that you've come to about how we can best serve our teams from, in many ways, the bottom up rather than the top down. And so I want to thank you for being here today. I appreciate you. MPS, I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, Mike. I mean, seriously, thank you. This was terrific. We appreciate you being on. And to the law firm owners listening to this, thank you for investing your time here. And as we mentioned at the front side, look, if you got some value today, which it was impossible not to, and this isn't your first time listening or watching, make sure you hit that subscribe or follow button, depending on where you're listening or watching, and show some love down in the comments for Mike, and let us know your thoughts of All In when you get your copy and get a chance to read it. Mike, we appreciate you. Thank you very much for being
on. MPS, Richard, thank you both.
You're welcome.